So this is the Swag Podcast. We're back again today with another guest, Eden, a Boston native, Ethiopian, and I met her here at UMass. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Chris?
All right, I'm a little tired, but I'm good. Okay. Yeah. So for those who don't know you, can you speak about like where you're from?
Okay, yeah, definitely. I'm from Boston, born and raised. I grew up, for the most part, like in South End, like Lower Roxbury area. But halfway, or like in the beginning of high school, I moved to Rosendale, so still in Boston, but that's where I'm at now. Both of my parents are Ethiopian immigrants, so I'm first gen Ethiopian, and yeah, I'm at UMass Amherst now.
Cool. And so, from my knowledge, how I was introduced to you was through, I believe, Juliari. Shout out Juliari.
Gang.
She went to Boston Latin School and then transferred to Boston Latin Academy, where I went to school. She had told me certain things about Boston Latin School, so can you kind of talk about your experiences while you were there?
Oh, absolutely garbage. I can't believe we're talking about this first, but I mean, I knew it would come up. It was like a huge part of me growing up, you know, because you're there from like, what, 7th grade till, you know, your senior year. But for the most part, like, I had a decent experience, I think, compared to a lot of other people. I already knew a lot of people from my elementary school who just, like, also matriculated into the school, because I went to also, like, a majority white elementary school, so, like, that didn't surprise me at all, but, you know, like, the older I got, the more I realized how trash the institution was and how, like, you know, it prides itself on, like, helping inner, you know, quote-unquote inner-city kids, like, getting to, like, upper-tier schools like Harvard and stuff like that, but really it's just, like, a lot of the same types of people getting into these schools because their parents, like, push them. And help them out. I also was there, like, through a really dark period of my life, like, when my father passed away, and I felt like the school did, like, the exact opposite of helping me. Like, they basically were kind of like, oh, like, you're on your own. Figure it out if you can, which was, like, really crazy. My grades went through a lot, but, you know, I bounced back, and I'm still in college, but, yeah.
Yeah, based off what, like, Juliari said, it was, like, a lot of negative things. That's why it pushed her away from BLS. And so from my experiences at BLA, I think we're, like, for some reason, I always thought, like, BLS might have been similar just because how BLA and BLS are related through, like, the school system, whatever it's called, like, the exam schools.
Yeah.
But, like, BLA, from my experiences, was just, like, diverse. Like, there were so many different type of people there. Yeah. And then when I heard Juliari finally talk about it, I thought it was weird because it was just, like, she was just basically, like, it's, like, basically entirely white. Like, the school is just so predominantly white.
It's actually, it's so crazy because it's kind of like a college. It's, like, a lot of nepotism, like, a lot of people whose families, like, already went there or parents who, like, knowing, like, moving to Boston because they were, like, oh, I want my kid to go to Latin because it'll give them, like, a better chance at going to, like, Harvard because I went to Harvard 20, 30 years ago. So it's, like, a lot of stuff like that and a lot of kids who come from, like, honestly, West Roxbury, like, they all come from, like, the same schools. Their parents did the same thing. And they just, like, know that that's where they're going to end up. So a lot of the stuff that's there is, like, catered to them. And it's also because, like, the admin at the school is mainly just looking out for those kids because they have the parents who will, like, talk to them if something goes wrong. You know what I mean? Like, if, like, a teacher treats me poorly, I'm just going to go home and tell my mom. And she's going to be like, okay, well, why didn't you, like, do X, Y, and Z? Versus, like, that kid's parents might, like, go on the email list and be like, yo, what's good, like, at so-and-so. So that's really kind of what it is.
Do you think the part of that, for your personal experience, was that you're a first-generation student, so that, like, your parents might not necessarily know how to navigate the school systems?
I think that's part of it, but I also feel like they shouldn't have to. You know what I mean? Like, it's a public school. I feel like your parents shouldn't have to speak up for you, and I honestly don't. I don't feel like I would want my mom to speak up for me. You know what I mean? I feel like that's kind of embarrassing. Like, you can't even deal with your own issues on your own, but that's how that whole system plays out. And you see those kids, like, their parents, like, will edit their essays for them and, like, you know, help them with their math homework and, like, stupid stuff like that, which I feel like at first, like, when I was there, I was like, oh, those kids are dumb. Like, their parents are helping them with everything. But, like, as time goes on, you see the effects of that and, like, how they're doing better. And, like, you're kind of confused by that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I personally, like, similar situation. So, like, when I was growing up, I'm also first-generation student, so it was just me and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my sister's 4 years older than me, so, like, by the time I got to high school, she was already in college, so she couldn't really help me anymore. She didn't really help me, so it was kind of me trying to figure everything out myself. Like, I couldn't just go to my parents and just be like, hey, I need help with this, because one, they either didn't know what the hell it was, or two, it was that they were too busy working, so they didn't have time to, like, try to help me.
No facts, yeah. I think my mom definitely tried her best to help me and my brother. My brother's only a year older than me, so I think that made it, like, a tiny bit easier, because we could kind of lean on each other, but it still felt like we were learning, like, at the same pace, so, like, there wasn't much we could do for each other, but, yeah, I don't know. I feel like they would help if they wanted to. I mean, they would help if they could, but they really couldn't. A lot of the stuff didn't really... It wasn't straightforward enough, but, yeah.
So I guess moving forward now, like, a couple years later, you come and you come straight to UMass Amherst?
Oh, nah. I transferred here.
So where'd you originally go?
I actually went to Temple down in Philly. I went there only for a semester. It was really cool. What attracted me first to Temple was just the fact that it was in Philly. Like, I had visited a couple times with my friends. And the city's just, like, so much more diverse than Boston, than, like, anything I had ever seen, like, up north. My bad. Than, like, anything I had seen up north. So I was just, like, I definitely want to be in Philly, and that was the school I got into. And they actually gave me the best financial aid besides UMass. So I, like, rationalized going there. But then after a semester, I was just, like, I can't keep paying, like, extra few thousand to be, like, in the city, so... I told myself, like, I would move out there, like, somewhere else after college.
So how's your... So now you're in your senior year here at UMass. Can you kind of speak on the differences that you saw between Temple and UMass, not only kind of, like, the atmosphere of, like, where the school is, but the atmosphere of the school itself?
The atmosphere of the school is, like, completely different. Like, Temple's, like, literally right in the middle of the city, sort of like Northeastern.
Okay.
That's, like, how the campus is kind of set up. So you're just, like, in the thick of it. UMass is so isolated. Like, you literally will only see other college students. Like, Temple, I feel like if I didn't want to see people on campus, if I didn't want to see other college students, I could literally walk down the block and, like, be completely removed from the school, which was super nice because that's what I'm used to, like, growing up. Like, when you're at school, you're at school. When you're not at school, you're not at school. But I feel like at UMass, there's no escaping, like, the I'm at school feeling, if that makes sense. Like, you're constantly on campus, or, like, even if you're in, like, downtown Amherst, like, you're aware of the fact that, like, you're only really seeing people you know from, like, class and stuff like that.
But, I mean, for me, I get the same feeling, but it's, like, just growing up in Boston, growing up in a city, and then moving here to Amherst, where literally, like, the population doubles when school is in session.
Yeah.
So, like, it's trash going to, like, a little town school where, like, you literally have, like, one main street and that's about it.
Yeah. And you, like, don't really have that many opportunities for, like, outside of campus activities. Like, everyone's like, join clubs. But I'm like, what if you don't want to join a club? Like, maybe you want to, like, work at some, like, retailer or, like, do something else outside of, like, I guess, campus life. And it's really not a huge option here. But there's definitely some pros, though, still to having that life. Like, I see why people have it, why people, like, coming to campuses like this. But I think for me, I'm definitely glad to be almost done with it, you know.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm on the same boat as you. I just wish I was graduating this semester, but...
I'm sorry, fam.
Yeah, I'm just trying to finish off and get out. So, we were actually, before we even got on the podcast, we were actually talking about your study abroad experience. Can you speak about that?
Yeah, so I studied abroad last summer, summer 17, in Morocco. I lived in the capital for about 2 months studying Arabic, so I took, like, 6 hours of Arabic class Monday through Friday. It was actually kind of crazy. But my Arabic got a little bit better. Actually got a lot better than it did on campus. And yeah, I just learned a whole lot of shit about living, like, in North Africa that I wouldn't have even had, like, any idea about if I hadn't done that.
Was it, like, a big culture shock for you when you went there? Because coming from Boston and then going to, like, Morocco, I don't know if you've ever been there before, but, like, going to a new place and actually, like, living there for a period of time.
Yeah. It was huge culture shock, and I honestly didn't really think that I was going to have the culture shock because I have traveled before, like, been to Ethiopia a few times, like, been to a couple places in Europe a few times, so I was like, oh, I'll probably be all right, like, with the culture shock, but, you know, like, everywhere you go, the culture's completely different, and I think the main thing that, like, really gave me culture shock was the fact that I was, the first month I lived with a host family, so I was, like, deep in their culture, and it was Ramadan. So, like, they were, like, really practicing, and I was just like, whoa, like, I was kind of shook. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what we were talking about basically was that, like, how I was in southern Spain at the time, and you'd hit me up because you were like, yo, I'm going to Barcelona, what's good? Yeah, so I was, like, giving you a list of things to talk about and, I mean, not talk about, to go to and visit and stuff like that. So, like, how was, like, first of all, how was it traveling for you? Because, like, traveling when you're in Europe is really easy. Yeah. But I don't know when you're in Africa, like, how easy it is to actually travel.
It's actually a lot harder, I think, depending on who you are, though. For me, it was still really easy because I have an American passport. My name is, like, fairly American if for, like, the average looker. Like, my name's Eden. Like, a lot of people, I don't think, realize that that's also an Ethiopian name. And my last name's, like, not common, so I don't think people have thought too much about it, like, at the border and stuff. But I was traveling with someone who had an Arab name but an American passport, and she was getting, like, hella trouble. And she's darker skinned than me, so I feel like a lot of the borders, like, the border control there was very, like, and we didn't even, I feel like this is important to say, like, we didn't even travel by boat. Like, we took a flight, mm-hmm. and they were still giving us, like, hella trouble for her. And I remember at one point, like, I was already past, like, the line that you cross, like, once you get into Spain, like, about to get my bags and stuff, and I see Shorty, like, still talking to someone, like, kind of arguing with them about what's going on. So I thought that was kind of wild, but I also realized it was because, you know, there's a lot of immigration coming from, like, West Africa into Spain and stuff like that, so they were being highly, like, I mean, they were being racist, I think, definitely, because, like, she had an American passport, but, you know, they were doing their thing.
Yeah, when I was in Spain, one of the professors was talking about it. She was talking about basically how there's, like, at the time, there was, like, a big influx of people, like, taking boats from, like, Northern Africa into, like, Spain to, like, seek for new jobs, so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was one of the bigger culture shocks, too, just, like, day-to-day in Morocco, seeing how many, like, West Africans were living on the streets, were, like, trying to get money to, like, move on to, like, the next point in their, like, travels. And also seeing how, like, the Moroccans were treating African people, especially... even me and my friends who were, like, on the trip, there were only two other black girls on the trip, but, like, the way that they would treat us if we were, like, apart from the group, because if they didn't hear us speak, especially, they'd be like, oh, like, those are just some, like, West Africans trying to roll through Morocco, and they treat us like we legit didn't exist. Like, yeah, it was actually crazy. But then when they would hear us speaking, they would be like, oh, they're Americans, and then they'd call us, like, Beyonce or, like, Nicki Minaj, some wild shit like that. Yeah, it was actually wild.
Yeah, I mean, I'd gone to Morocco for a few days, and, like, one of the biggest shocks, like, culture shock for me was that we were on, like, a bus, like, going, when it was, like, we were going back to Spain, mm-hmm. there was, like, kids, like, they would go under the bus and, like, hang on under the bus while the bus was driving and, try to, like, jump into the bus so they can sneak across the border, and I had never seen anything like that, so I was just, like, that was a big culture shock for me.
Yeah, people, it's real out there, I think that same summer was when that huge story about Libya was published.
Yeah.
About people, like, trying to cross the border and were actually getting enslaved. And I was, like, not surprised at all. Like, I think I had just gotten back from, like, my traveling that summer when those stories were being published and everyone was outraged. And I was just kind of, like, I think my background also, like, knowing a lot about East African trade, like, slave trade and stuff like that, didn't surprise me. But I was still, like, I can't believe, like, people are hearing news about this now, and, like, there's still not much action being done, you know?
Yeah, it happens with a lot of things. It's, like, it's the effect of, like, oh, well, it's not happening to me, or it's not happening over here, so, like, just leave it alone.
Yeah, and especially because a lot of people just don't know that much about it, like, not knowing that it's, like, a historical thing, that it's not, like, a brand new thing. So I feel like people thought, like, maybe if the media caught its attention, like, it probably was fixed, but it's, like, the government of those countries probably already knew. They were probably well aware. I'm pretty sure in Morocco, the king had slaves where he was living and stuff like that. So, you know, it's nothing new over there. But it's also a different form of slavery than I think Americans imagine, you know.
What's the form of slavery, is it?
Because, you know, like, in American history, we learn about chattel slavery, like, basically, like, you know, American slavery. But I feel like there it's more casual, like people have servants, you know what I mean, basically, as slaves. They're still treated poorly, like, it's still, like, horrible, but I don't think it's the same exact type of slavery that we, like, imagine, if that makes sense, and I feel like that's what makes it easier to, like, sweep under the rug, too.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah. So, I mean, what'd you gain from your experience of, like, going to Morocco and being at a different country, because, like, usually when people, like, say they studied abroad, it's, like, the typical places, like, Europe, or, like, yeah, basically Europe, but, like, you chose to go somewhere different, like Morocco. What did you gain from that?
I honestly feel like, besides Arabic, because I think going to Morocco, like, my Arabic increased immensely. I had a really good Arabic teacher, who, shout out to, yeah, her name, fuck. That's her, she's lit, I have her on Facebook. But, besides Arabic, I would say it was just a huge learning lesson. Like, before I had gone, actually, my mom, like, greatly warned me not to go. Because she had spent some years, like, living and traveling in different Arab countries. And she was basically like, they'll treat you really poorly. And I feel like I was kind of put in my place because, like, as an American, I'm thinking, like, I have an American passport. Like, if some shit happens to me, like, I'll call the embassy type mentality, which is, like, super annoying or whatever. But I'm also, like, that's my protection. But, like, going there day to day, knowing, like, that's not the reality of things. Like, it would take a split second for someone to, like, actually lash out on me and, like, fuck up my whole life. And I actually, like, for sometimes, I think me and my friend will walk around at night and be like, yo, this is actually really not safe. Like, we shouldn't be doing this because we're black and we're female. So I think that was probably the biggest learning lesson for me, was, like, not to just take my freedom for granted, like, my everyday, like, comfort and stuff like that. But, yeah.
Yeah. I had wished, now reflecting back, that I had chosen, like, different places that I would have went, because mm-hmm. I had studied abroad for like a year, mm-hmm. but I stayed in the same country, just two different cities, and gotcha. I wish that I had like
ventured out
and gone somewhere else. Like, now reflecting on it, I really wish I would have gone somewhere in like Asia, mm-hmm. which would have been like a complete culture shock for me.
Yeah, it would have been wild. Yeah, sometimes I think maybe I should have just gone to like a traditional study abroad too, because I'm like, I would have just had more fun, but I don't think I would have matured as much, because I think the summer, like, I remember when I came back, my friends were like, yo, you're different. Like, I think my mindset had changed a lot, and I think probably for the better, at least for me. Like, yeah
that was a big thing in both the programs that I saw. Like, some people were literally there just to like get fucked up. Yeah, like, fuck around.
That's
get
what
fucked
I would have been on
every day. I mean, I was on it like one semester, but the second semester I was just like, I was like, I need to do, like, different shit. Like, I actually need to enjoy myself, like...
Yeah.
Because, like, look at the things within the city that people, like, take for granted.
Yeah.
Because I felt like, in my programs, a lot of people are, like, just, like, vacationing, going to different places every weekend, and they never got to enjoy the city that they were in.
That's real. I think another big thing, I don't know if this happened for you guys, but I feel like studying abroad in general, everyone gets close with the people you're with.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for me especially, like, my first host family ended up being, like, super racist, super weird. So me and my friend actually moved out and got our own apartment, so I feel like that brought us a lot closer, because, like, we were just, like, always dependent on each other and stuff like that. And even with, like, a couple of the other people in our program, we were just, like, not really fucking with the rest of the people, because they were on some, like, oh, we're, like, white in Morocco type thing, like, taking photos of everyone, like, wearing their, like, traditional garb. So I feel like I got really close to the people that I was, like, actually cool with. And I also feel like I made a really big effort in those cases to travel, like, around Morocco and, like, really get to know the area. And I actually made a connection with someone, so random, but, like, someone I knew from home connected me with some like, a family friend of theirs in Morocco, and she owns, like, her family owns, like, a resort in Marrakesh.
She's cool.
But, yeah, and I still talk to her. She actually has the same, she went to school in Montreal, and that's how she knew my friends from home. So, yeah, she, like, hooked me up completely, and she still, like, is in contact with me, because she studied the exact same thing as me in college. She was, like, a comm major, Afriam minor, like, really interested in film and stuff like that. So I feel like if I hadn't gone somewhere like Morocco, like, I wouldn't have gone looking for those, like, interesting connections, like, within the country itself. But, yeah.
Yeah, my first semester, I think, like, I was in, my first semester, I lived in a house with 13 other people.
Jeez, it sounds like Jersey Shore.
Yo, low-key, some nights we got wild, but, like, there was, like, that, like, during that semester when I was in the southern Spain, like, I felt like I was with them a lot.
Yeah.
And then the second semester, I tried to, like, consciously make an effort of, like, let me stop hanging out with so many Americans and let me try to hang out with, like, the actual local people.
Yeah.
And, like, let me try to do things on my own, like, try to grow. Like, one of the biggest regret I had was not doing a solo trip. Like, just going on a trip by myself to a random city, not knowing anything, and just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because I've heard so many good things about people being, like, I did a solo trip. Like, you grow from it because, like, you're literally alone. Like, you either stay in wherever you're, like, you're living and you just stay in, or you force yourself to go to, like, a bar or something and meet people. Like, you're forced to do something.
That's real. Yeah, I definitely didn't do that in Morocco. I don't think I would have felt safe. But I have friends who were in, like, Italy and, like, Spain and stuff who definitely did that, who were, like, yeah, definitely one of the better weekends that they had, actually.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest regrets, not doing that. But, yeah, and then you come back. So when, that was 2017, you said, right?
Yeah.
So then you come back
2017,
the next semester. And then how did it change your perception of, like, UMass here after being, like, gone for a couple months?
Honestly, I think my perception of UMass is basically the same, but probably even more negative, because I just feel like I spent the summer in Morocco, and then following that, I actually visited my family in Ethiopia, who I hadn't seen in, like, 7-8 years. So I feel like that trip especially, like, rounded me a lot in, like, who I am and, like, what I'm here to do and stuff like that. But I feel like coming back to UMass, I was kind of like, okay, this is not real life. You know, like, sometimes, I don't know if everyone has that feeling, but sometimes I come to campus and I'm just like, this is literally like a simulation. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I feel like our interactions here sometimes can be like super superficial and like just monotonous because it's like the same every week. But it also, I think, was like a learning lesson for me to just like get through it. And then, like, you know, I'll be able to do whatever I want afterwards.
Yeah. For me, me coming back after like being gone for like a year, it was just like, wow, I really don't want to be here.
Right.
I just really do not want to be here anymore. After seeing everything that I saw, I was just like, yo, being back here is trash.
Yeah.
And, like, some people just didn't get it. And, like, I was just like, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
it's just so bland here.
Yeah.
That, like, when you're, especially when you're outside of the country, you're just, because I feel like sometimes I get that feeling when I go to home to Boston even. I'm like, damn, like, I'd rather be at home because, like, there's so much more going on, so much more realness. But, you know, there's stuff going on here. It's just, like, you have to find it. And, yeah, I don't know. It's not going to be the same, just period.
But alongside you being just a student here at UMass, I know that you've also been involved with, like, the Collegian, which is a newspaper, and the radio station, which I forgot what it was called.
WMUA.
Can you talk about your experiences with both of them?
The Collegian, I actually started freshman year when I first transferred here. Like, I knew I wanted to be a writer, even though, like, I'm a comm major or whatever. I've always wanted to write. So I, like, wrote an article or two for them freshman year and then sort of fell off. But then, like, more recently, I've been like, all right, let me get back into this because I wrote a lot this summer at my job. So I've been recently starting, I'm trying to start a column there, just like a artist to watch column. So I'm doing it, like, weekly. And then WMUA, I've been more consistent with. I started, like, freshman year, I think. And I just stopped, like, being, like, involved with them last year because I'm trying to give myself, like, some space to do personal work. But I had a I had a show on WMUA called The Kitchen where I played, like, rap, trap, funk, R&B, alternative R&B, stuff like that. And I also hosted people, like, on campus. So I had, like, Christian from Audacia Kilo, like, back when he had, like, first started. And just, like, people like that on campus who are, like, trying to do stuff. So, like, I probably would have asked you if, like, you were around then. And it was really cool. But, yeah.
Did you call it The Kitchen or was it just called The Kitchen?
I called it The Kitchen.
Why'd you call it The Kitchen?
I don't know, because I feel like that year I was going through a lot with my hair. Like, I had just shaved I shaved my head freshman year. And so, like, my hair was in, like, a little teeny-weeny afro. And, you know, people call, like, the back of a girl, like, a black girl's hair is called The Kitchen. Because it's, like, when you straighten your hair, like, when you do your hair in the back, it, like, hurts a lot.
Okay.
Or, like, it gets burned. So that's what I was thinking about. At the time, I thought it was cool. If I was naming a show now, I definitely wouldn't use it. But I think it was, like, definitely made sense for, the point I was at that year.
Okay. And then two, shout out to Christian. You recently did a podcast with him.
Yeah.
I recently listened to it, too. I thought I was really interested in your perception on certain topics and, like, the overall conversation. I think it was, like, clout chasers.
Yeah.
Like, clout chasers.
Yeah.
So how was that experience, like, being on I don't know if that was your first experience on a podcast, but how was your experience doing that and talking about that with Christian?
Yeah, that was probably my first time being on, like, someone else's podcast. I've done podcasts for, like, class work and stuff like that before, but I really like talking to Christian. We actually have, like, a long history of, like, just arguing. We worked together last year, and, like, we had a class together a while ago. But we never agree on, like, artists or, like, on, like, views. But I think this was probably the first time that we had, like, more of an understanding. But, yeah, we mainly just talked about hip-hop and streetwear. Just, like, the way that fashion's going, the way that, like, Instagram's going, stuff like that.
The funniest part to me was what you said about Playboi Carti.
I love what it's freaking music.
Yeah.
I saw that on Twitter. I can't take credit for that. But that's a fact. And I feel like I actually was thinking about that when I went home, too. I feel like the reason people really like Playboi Carti and, like, music like that is because it's more about how the music makes you feel and, like, how you want to move. It's less lyrical. It's less about, like, oh, he did that. Like, he said that to you. It's more about, like, yeah, like...
So are you more about the vibe now? Are you more about the vibe of the music or, like, what the message is? Because, like, I feel like those are, like, the two arguing sides.
So, personally, I feel like they're just two different types of music. Like, I don't like pinning them against each other. That's why I hate now when people tell me, like, oh, who are your top five? Because I'm like, damn, like, that can mean so many different things because there's so many different artists now. But personally, like, what I want to listen to on a day-to-day usually is more alongside, like, the Playboi Carti, even Sheck West, stuff like that, because of the way it makes me feel. But I'll still listen to, like, Dom Kennedy, Mick Jenkins, like, Kendrick Lamar. I still love that stuff. But it definitely takes more, like, listening power and more, like, oh, that's what he's saying. Like, that's nice type shit. Which is, like, cool. But I usually am just trying to, like, chill, party.
It's like a mood type of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And you also talked about fashion. I actually wanted to ask you, like, because you're from Boston, what do you think the perception is of fashion in Boston? Because I feel like...
Perception of Boston fashion, I feel like, is just New York wannabeism. I feel like it's been that for a minute. And I think only recently is Boston, like, breaking out of that because we're having our own creatives come out and, like, actively be like, nah, like, we're not New York, we're Boston. And I think a lot of the music paves the way for that, for streetwear especially.
Yeah, I've been trying to get in contact with some people, but, you know, people are busy. But, it's hard. It's hard. Yeah, because I feel like that's usually a conversation that I've had with other people who make music, like Michael. Shout out Michael. I've had that conversation with him. Cool. It's just, like, people want to be, like, New York, or they just want to copy what's the in thing at the moment, and then, like, it overshadows what Boston actually is, because that's not, like, Boston.
Yeah, that's definitely the issue, but I think if you get, like, deeper in the Boston scene, you really do see that people are doing new shit, and people are doing cool stuff, but it's just hard, because, like, the market in Boston is not for fashion. Like, I've actually been talking to my mom a lot about this, because she's always like, what are you going to do with a communications major? And I'm just like, in Boston, probably nothing, because it's more like finance, medical field, stuff like that. But if you move to New York or LA, that's where all, like, the big media companies are, the big fashion companies are. So I feel like that's really what holds Boston back. The fact that we don't have, like, the larger institutions to, like, back all these creatives. So, with, like, the people who do well in Boston are doing really well, but then they have to move out in order to, like, keep going.
I see what you're saying, but, like, when I think about stuff like that, I feel like if you go to New York, like, you're going to a market that's already saturated so much, so then you're just competing with everybody. But then if you were to actually, like, stay in Boston and create the market itself, like, you have so much opportunity to do things.
Yeah. I think that's a goal for people, but I feel like it's also really hard, again, without bigger institutions. Like, I think you can see, like, now we have Converse and, I think, New Balance, like, right outside of Boston. But I feel like those two companies being here have made, like, a big impact in, like, a lot of other people, like, a lot of creatives in Boston. But if we had more of that, I think it would be a little bit easier. And about saturation, I feel like that's why when you're coming from a different city, you have to be, like, twice as good than if you're, like, just from New York or, like, you're already there in the scene. So I feel like that, I mean, it is what it is. It's hard, but I feel like that's the only way you're going to make it. If you're confident in yourself and, like, you know you have a good product or, like, good style.
Yeah, I just see a lot of people. I just see a lot of people and them being creative, and I see, like, this big, like, not resurgence, but, like, this big growth of, like, creatives in general, not just music, but fashion.
Yeah.
Like, grad music, I believe, like, is, like, a blog about, like, people who make music and stuff like that. So I feel like there's a big, like, upbringing of, like these industries are coming, and it's just, like, looming and just waiting for something to, like, pop the bubble.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the biggest issue is really just money in Boston, because it's, like, if you don't have the money, like, for people to back you in your endeavors, like, it really can't pop off, I feel like. Because I've seen, actually, grad music, they do really cool stuff. But I feel like for them to grow, they need more money, they need more writers, they need, you know what I mean? So that's really the trouble in Boston. But, maybe there's a way to find it. I'm not a business person or, like, an entrepreneur, but maybe there's a way to, like, back that without going to, like, the bigger... like, already made companies, but, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of dark.
Nah, I face in Boston. I think something's going to happen eventually. Like, I see, like, Cousin Stiz doing with the Celtics. Like, he narrated, I think, like, this video for them and, like, doing all this other stuff. And,
yeah, I actually saw the guy who produced it is, like, a friend of some dude that I follow who also makes music. So, like, I definitely see the connections. But actually, an interesting thing that one of my friends was talking about the other day was how, like, they think that Boston would flourish a lot more if, like, Boston creatives embrace, like, people from the outside communities, too.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's, like, Lawrence, Brockton, like, all those places that are, like, filled with people of color, you know what I mean? Maybe even more so than Boston. And, like, you know, Boston people, we're kind of like, oh, you're from Brockton? Like,
yeah.
That's not Boston, which, like, totally, it's not Boston. Don't say you're from Boston if you're from Brockton. But, like, if we were more embracing of those creatives, like, maybe we'd have a bigger scene, maybe we'd have a bigger community with a lot more going on. And that's actually something that I actually think might be true. But, yeah.
Yeah, like, going off of that, I think, like, a big part of it is people are just, like, focused on themselves, and they don't want to support other people.
Oh, definitely.
So, like, people are just like, nah, you fuck with me, blah, 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 but they don't want to, like, go, like, support other people. So there's, like, that's usually what people say, like, artists, when they come up, they're just like, yo, you get the most hate from your city.
Yeah,
which sucks. But I think it sucks, because I feel like that's where you should be getting the most love.
Yeah. Nah, I feel like Boston, I feel like if you're a Boston creative that, like Cousin Stiz, he gets so much love from the city. Yeah. But I think it's harder, I mean, I'm not him, but I feel like it's harder to get love from people you really know. Like, if you're born and raised in the city and, like, niggas know you on the block or whatever, like, I feel like they are less likely to back you because they're just like, oh, whatever. Like, I seen him, he's probably not, like, he wasn't that good, like, last year. Like, how's he good now? I feel like those are the people who are more limiting in your growth sometimes because they, like, just don't believe in you, stuff like that. But, like, when you go to Cousin Stiz shows, you see all the little, like, white Boston boys who grew up in, like, you know, Austin or whatever, they stand. I'm like, that's it.
Yeah, that's what Michael was saying on the podcast when I had him here. He's like, yeah, most of his audience is, like, 16-year-old white kids. And he's just like, for him, he was just like, yo, it's kind of lit, but it's so weird at the same time. Like,
because they get really hyped, too. When I went, I actually saw Playboi Carti this summer, and that's probably his same crowd, too. And, like, they were just moshing OD hard. And, like, people I knew that were, like, around me from Boston were just kind of, like, you know, chilling, like, having a good time but not getting too crazy. And I was, like, kind of, like, fuck it, like, let's go into the crowd because those are the people with the energy. It's, like, definitely it's a weird dynamic having, like, 16-year-old white boys or white boys in general. Like, I think they've been the biggest consumers of rap music, like, from the start almost, like, after it was commercialized. But it's a weird feeling, but it's also, like, that's where the money's at and that's how you're really going to get back. So fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess trying to bring it back towards you, I know that you're involved here, like, academically and, like, the arts. Can you speak about, like, you being, like, an art student? Because I feel like when I hear people speak about art students, they're usually like, why are you doing arts? Like, you're not going to make money, X, Y, Z. Like, what are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah, I feel like I definitely got a lot of that backlash. When I a couple years ago, I was just an Afro-Am major with a studio arts minor. And, like, everybody around me would be like, yo, what, like, this guy, like, what is she about to do with that? You know what I mean? And I feel like for me, that definitely did scare me, so I kind of balanced it out with comm. Like, I took a couple of comm classes and realized, like, it's a really good balance between, like, arts and, like, transferable skills, because they teach you how to use, like, cameras and broadcasting and, like, writing skills, stuff like that. So I think a lot of transferable work skills are in the comm major, and that's what makes me more confident in, like, also doing all the art stuff.
I think, like, based off of what you said, I think, like, other majors, like, usually, like, STEM or business or stuff like that, like, I feel like they're really good at what they do, but they lack, like, public speaking, for example. That's, like, really important.
Yeah.
So, like, you as an art major, I feel like you get that exposure to the public speaking aspect, too, which I feel like is very important when you do a lot of things in certain fields, especially when you're in a field where you're constantly talking to people.
Yeah. I actually took a public speaking class last semester within the comm department, and it was helpful. But I also feel like a lot of the skills that we do learn in communications are things that you can learn on your own. It's just, like, people don't do it normally. Like, they don't practice those things outside of the workplace. So, like, when it comes up, like, in the workspace, they're confused. And, like, I think people like to downplay, like, the comm major's significance because they're like, oh, like, you just talk and write and, like, read and stuff. But it's like, yeah, but, like, we know how to, like, frame an argument, or we know how to frame, like, a certain kind of point of view that, like, maybe you might struggle with. So it's interesting.
Yeah, did you get backlash from your parents because you're a first-generation student being, like, in these fields?
Yeah, I mean, it's just my mom. My dad passed away when I was in high school, but my mom has sort of adopted a, like, do-what-you-want philosophy, but she still nags me. It's more like, yeah, you can do communications. Like, she's not going to tell me I can't do something, but she'll still be, like, when I come home for the weekends, like, yo, so what are you doing? Like, you looking at jobs? You doing this? You doing that? So I think it's more just, like, anxiety, like, trust. Like, I think she wants to trust that, like, I'll figure it out. But she also is, like, sis, like, what does that even mean? Like, what is a communications major? You know what I mean? Because, like, to her, that means basically nothing. So I feel like for a lot of immigrant and, like, first-generation kids, it's, like, nothing's really proven until, the point after they see the money. You know what I mean? Like, your parents really just want to see, like, oh, I'm making $80,000 a year for my first job, or, like, however much, and, like, just know that you have some kind of security. That's all they're really looking for.
I know that you're about to graduate after the semester. This might be like a heavy question, but have you thought about like what you want to do and like what kind of field you want to go into?
Yeah, actually, I've been thinking about it a lot. It's just been hard because I'm taking 5 courses, so I'm just like, damn, like I should be like applying to jobs and also doing this. But for a while, I wanted to work in media, like magazines or writing or stuff like that. I think I'm still gonna like shoot my shot at that, but I think what's more likely for now is that I'll work in like some kind of like marketing or like branding, PR type stuff, because there's just like a bigger market, I feel like, for that, more money to be made. And then besides that, I'm just trying to work on my own personal projects, because I have also been talking to my mom a lot about how like this is going to be the first time in a while where like I don't have any responsibilities, you know what I mean?
So you can double down on what you want to do.
Exactly. So I think because I'm graduating a semester early, I'm taking the semester off from like doing any kind of like real work, and just like I'll probably waitress or like do whatever I can in terms of like, or I might actually just work at the place that I did this summer, the Hip Hop Archive, make some money, and then like on the side be doing my personal work.
And you spoke about the Hip Hop Archive on Christian's podcast a little bit. Can you kind of explain exactly what it is?
Yeah, so it's basically an archive that they founded at Harvard for hip hop music. So they just have like a whole big research institution dedicated to it. So I was working as a research assistant, just like looking at classic hip hop albums and like making them, I don't know, just putting them down like online in a database, writing different summaries, writing different things of significance, stuff like that.
I know you listen to hip hop, but did it expose you to artists that you weren't really familiar with, because that like an archive? So like, I don't know how deep the archive was, but like, did it expose you?
It's OD. Like, I spent the summer, like, literally 9 to 5, like, just only talking about music, only looking at music. We had BET jams in the background the whole day. Like, it was a lot of music that I probably would have never heard. And I think that's my favorite part about being there. But it also, like, the classic hip-hop albums, they're all albums that I definitely would have recognized, like, just being someone who listens to hip-hop. But they weren't albums that I would, like, bump on a day-to-day. Like, I wouldn't know, like, the history behind them and stuff like that, so I think that was a really cool part of working there.
Yeah, see, from my perspective, how you described it, I feel like I would have enjoyed that. Just being surrounded by hip-hop, listening to that all day, and, like, learning more about the backstories, because, I do listen to, like, some, like, considered classic albums, but I don't know the history, though, behind it. Like,
It's crazy, yeah. A lot of this stuff is crazy, and, like, not even realizing, like, some of the albums I didn't even hear of, like, Ninth Wonder is the person who, like, founded the project. I think I talked about that on Christian's thing. But I didn't even know he had a classic hip-hop album out, like, The Minstrel Show. And, like, when I listened to it, I was like, damn, this shit's, like, OD. Like, I would never have listened to this in my free time, but it's really nice.
So this is a random question, just because it just came to mind, but still, like, based off your experiences working in the archive and then, like, music today, do you think music back then was better than it is today?
See, that's just not a fair question to me. I think a lot of hip-hop heads will definitely say yes. They'll be like, absolutely, but I just think the game's changed, just like how the game changed, like, you know, a couple times before.
Yeah.
I think now, like I was saying about Playboi Carti, like, it's more about how the music makes you feel, and I feel like, in a way, it's sort of, I've definitely, like, been thinking about this, it's been more like rock music.
Yeah.
Like, niggas are reclaiming rock music, like, people like Rico Nasty, it's the same thing. It's not about her lyrics, it's about how, like, agitated she makes you feel, or, like, how hyped she makes you feel. Yeah, there's just, like, a heavier emphasis on the producer, too, which, like, back in the day, it was, like, the MC and the DJ and stuff like that. So I think it's just a change in the game. Whether you like it or not is up to you, but I'm still with it.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast earlier, and they were talking about how, like, this, like, new trend in, like, hip-hop is kind of, like, more towards, like, being a rock star and, like, emulating what the rock stars did, like all this, like, sad boy music and, like, being like, oh, I'm not a rapper, I'm a rock star, an artist.
Yeah, niggas forget rock music started with black people, so it's just like, we're reclaiming rock music, what about it?
Yeah, I just think it's weird to see, like, the evolution of it from, like, the early 80s to, like, everybody hating it to, like, now being the biggest genre in the world.
Rock music, yeah, it's actually hilarious. I have a professor who is actually, I have his class in, like, an hour, but it's a countercultural film class, and he was, like, one of those dudes who, like, lived in a commune, he was, like, a whole hippie, and he's always just like, yeah, rock music was, like, you know, like, the Antichrist, like, you know, the Beatles came, and all these girls went crazy. And, like, Elvis and stuff like that. And I'm just like, yeah, that sounds great and all, but, like, we're going to talk about the fact that they just completely stole the sound and, like, made it something completely, like now it's kind of like pop music even.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so common and whatever. But, like, when niggas are doing it now, people are like, oh, that's outlandish. Like, with trap music, they're just like, oh, that's crazy. So, it's interesting to see how it looks.
I mean, I don't mind. I like people trying to experiment. Like, when the Young Thug tried to do a fucking country album. Like, yeah. It was different, but, like, at least he's trying something new. Like,
yeah.
Instead of everybody just making the same type of music and just, like, everyone kind of, like, there's, like, a pocket that everybody kind of sounds the same.
Yeah. Young Thug, I definitely slept on him for a while. And, like, more recently, I've been peeping, like, he's just completely changed the game, like, with his samples, with the way that he sounds, all that. And, like, we're seeing, like, the trickle-down of that with Gunna, Little Baby, and stuff like that. And people are talking about that every day.
I think even with fashion, though, like, he's, like, wearing dresses. He's, like, coloring his nails. Yeah. He's calling people bae. But, like, no one really tests him. Like, he's, like, pull up, see what happens.
Yeah. I feel like it was really interesting when he did the whole dress thing, because I think niggas went crazy, but it's something that's been going on forever. Like, boys have been wearing dresses. Boys do drag. You know what I mean? And, like, they don't necessarily have to be gay, or if they are, like, it's no issue. You know what I mean? But it's interesting because I feel like it was the first time that, like, a huge rap artist has done something like that. So people were just, like, hugely offended. Whereas, like, I feel like the younger generation, like, people around our age, I think that's what made us more obsessed with him. Like, we're just like, yo, this dude doesn't give a fuck. Like,
yeah.
That's really cool, so.
I think what attracted, like, him for a lot of people, like, I don't, like, the dress things, like you said, it's normal. People have done it for years. But, like, he's doing it in, like, a community that's so taboo. Like, that's something you're not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out here doing all these things. Like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And there's a history, I think. I talked about this at the archive this summer with my coworkers. Like, there's a history of, like, men coming out of the closet as after being rappers. And, like, you see their sales drop. Mm-hmm. And, like, you'll even see it on Twitter. Like, niggas will be like, oh, if this nigga's gay, like, I'm not going to listen to his music. And you'll see someone's sales literally drop because, like, people are questioning their sexuality. Like, you see all that, even with Tyler, the Creator, who went all this time, like, in the closet, and then when he finally came out, niggas were still acting funny, even though he's, like, this super established rapper. So I think that's also what made it really special, because, like, niggas still listen to him. He's still, like, a really big name for Young Thug, so. Not saying that Tyler isn't, but I think it had, like, less of a severe effect. But also, he didn't come out of the closet, so. That's kind of also the bottom line, I feel like, because it's such a taboo subject within hip-hop culture.
So insecure masculinity.
Yeah. Like, niggas so fragile. Niggas are so fragile. It's actually crazy. I'm, like, one sentence short from saying niggas ain't shit, but... I said it. Anyways.
I mean, it seems like you've had, like, large experiences in, like, because you've gone from, like, your high school experiences, what you've gone through there, living in different countries, then coming back here, being a writer, working for a radio station. Like, I feel like you're, like, diverse. Like, you're very, like, into a lot of different pockets.
Thank you.
I think it's interesting that, like, I like to have, like, I want people to come on here and, that, like, explain it. You don't necessarily have to be doing, like, music or some shit like
that. Yeah.
I just think, like, people, even in their own pockets, are interesting. For example, like, you, if you didn't want to, like, you just, like, next semester I'm going to double down. Like, I don't know what to do my writing. Like, Loki, you could do a blog.
I think I'm doing writing, and I have, like, a mixer. I'm not a mixer. I have a controller, so I've been DJing. So I think I'm going to work on that, too. But I think blogging is a huge thing that I might do, too.
You drop a mixtape?
Yeah, I'm trying to drop a whole mixtape series. I'm working on it right now, but I'm kind of a perfectionist, so, like, if my stuff doesn't sound good to me, I won't drop it. So we'll see when it drops.
So look out for that. It's coming soon, don't worry.
And I also feel like it's important, I like that you're saying, like, you like to have, like, diverse people on your podcast, because, like, I feel like for our generation, there's not one, like, path that niggas are gonna take,
because
like we're gonna go through so many different career choices and like stuff like that, just the way the market's set up. So I feel like that's important to highlight.
Yeah, that's what I try to do. Like, that's why when people ask me, like, what my podcast is about, it's really hard because it's not one central theme. Like, the first episode was about health, and then the second one is about music. Gotcha. The third one was about an immigration story. So it's like there's not one concrete, like, thing that's kind of like tying everything together, and it's just like, it's kind of hard for me to explain what the podcast is about.
Got you, yeah.
Because every episode is something different. Like, I don't want it to be just, like, a music thing, because then, like, I'm restricted to just talking about music.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, the person's more than that.
Yeah, a person's more than that. So, like, I don't want to restrict somebody to be like, oh, I know you do music, but don't talk about your own life. Just talk about your music. Like,
right.
No, like, there's more to the person than their art. And that's why I try to highlight, like, there's the person, and then there's the artist,
yeah.
or there's the person, and then there's the entrepreneur, like, whatever it may be.
Do you see yourself doing something like No Jumper? Do you watch No Jumper?
I do watch No Jumper. I like the way that he interviews people. I don't necessarily like all the interviewers that he does, mm-hmm. like, the people he interviews.
Gotcha.
Because some of them are just, like, very awkward, in their shell type of artists.
Yeah.
And they don't really know how to speak, and they'll just give you, like, one-word answers, and then you're like, this is a trash interview. And, like, I low-key feel bad for Adam because he has to just stick it out and just, like, well, I invited you, so I have to do this shit now. But, like, I think the way that he does it is very interesting. Like, the pocket that he's done it, like, everybody usually, like, big radio stations just interview, like, people that are already big.
Yeah.
And he's trying to highlight the people that are, like, trying to come up and stuff like that.
Yeah, those are my favorite kind of interviews to watch, personally.
Like, yeah, because you see, Adam 22, he did, like, some people's, like, first interviews, like, and then you see them blow up, like, a couple months. Like, he did, like, Lil Pump's, and then, like, Lil Pump, like, 8 months later, he had, like, Gucci Gang, and it went viral. It was huge. Nice. And he was there, like, from the beginning. He was just, like, I caught on when you had, like, 10,000 followers. Like,
Yeah. You get the most raw footage then, too, because you have less people telling that artist, like, yo, don't say this, mm-hmm. don't say that. So they're just still, like, just being themselves. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. What I really like about it is just, like, him and the way he interviews people and, like, how he knows how to conduct an interview.
Yeah.
And he knows how to speak to who. Like, he knows if he's going to have, like a little pump, how he's going to talk to him.
Yeah.
But then if he has, like, a Dom Kennedy, which you recently had, you talk to Dom Kennedy differently because...
Oh, I need to watch that.
Yeah, he did Dom Kennedy. Oh, yeah, I need to watch that shit too, actually. I love Dom Kennedy.
Same. Alright.
Yeah. Is there... anything else you want to talk about or just plug in or up to you, update the people on your life?
I mean, I'm really just set to graduate a semester early. Shout out to God. But, yeah, just follow me on Instagram if you want. It's 7_. Yeah, 7. And then just my name, Eden, 7_Eden. I'm probably going to be dropping a mixtape in a couple weeks. Nothing crazy, but it's going to be a whole series. So look out for that.
Her ad name will be in the bio. You want to talk to her about hip-hop or anything else, the arts, let her know. She got you. You trying to be on the mixtape, hit her up.
Yeah. If I need some, like, out of touch, like, grandma or something, or, like, the beginning intro or something. But, you know what I mean? Just kidding. I'll just ask my mom.
Well, I appreciate you for coming on, Eden. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.